From the Gettysburg and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg, I'm Ben Ponce, and this is On Target.
I'm Gari Mangala, and today on Target, we will be discussing a sexual assault allegation and a possible new business major.
Then I'll talk with Title IX officer and DPS assistant director, Faith Biesecker. Stay with us. All right, well, we are in the midst of finals week. It is Monday, December the 10th. I've already had one final on a Sunday, no less. Gettysburg College's Lutheran affiliation notwithstanding. It's fake news. I don't think Martin Luther would have been too happy with Sunday afternoon finals, but, well, he's dead. So, anyway, insightful commentary you get here on Target. What's been going on at Gettysburg College, Gari?
Well, most recently, there's been word of a business major floating around the management department. At the college, you know, we have our organization and management studies major, OMS, for short, and we have the business minor, but we don't have a business major, and that has definitely been something that I think we talk about a little bit as a deterrent from students coming to Gettysburg. Some people go to the liberal arts schools and get a business major, but we don't really have one of those, and OMS has become the butt of some jokes, I think, around campus.
What kind of jokes?
I believe that it's argued to be the easiest major on campus. I think that's something that people make jokes about.
Yeah, that's probably, I don't know, I hear that. I always make fun of my own major, that political science is where econ majors who failed out go. And I don't know, the same could probably be said about OMS.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think...
Just for the record, not a failed econ major. Never liked econ that much. Not entirely true. Do like econ. Not that good at it.
There we go. Dr. Heather Odell Dussault is talking about... She's the chairperson of the department, and she's talking about creating a dual major program, so similar to that of like international affairs, where you have to have that major and another major. They're thinking about making a business major, where there would be like a capstone requirement and everything else like that in elective courses, but you would have that with another major. OMS is not like that. OMS, you can just be an OMS major.
Right.
And I think the hope is that, you know, this would be something that would make Gettysburg College a more attractive school to a wider pool of applicants. I think a lot of people come with the assumption that there's a great business program and then there isn't. I've seen transfer students that come here and are kind of disappointed, like they love the college and they came here because they love the college and they have the credits to be a business major from their previous institution, and then they come here and they have to be an OMS major and they're not super happy about it. So I think this will provide an opportunity to get really what you want out of it. And some people may like OMS better than the business major, but I think providing that, the opportunity to choose which one you pursue is a good thing.
Yeah, and I mean, a couple of things. First is that Gettysburg College for a great many years had a business administration major, and
in fact,
most of the members of our board of trustees who have gone on to wildly successful careers in business and donated large sums of money to the college were probably business administration majors back in the day. Second is that it will be interesting to see how this major affects the rest of that department, insofar as if now that there's a business major, will anyone want to be an OMS major? And if not, you know, OMS has a large faculty who will then have, you know, dual majors in its department, but not the same number that it currently has. And it just seems like there could be a potential for this to be something that dramatically changes how the OMS program and the management department runs in general. And I think that they're aware of that, and that is something that I'm sure is being considered, but it'll just be interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, on that, I think the OMS major is what Gettysburg views as a traditional view of teaching business, whereas the business major is something, like, for example, if you're a theater major and you want to make your dual major a business major, you have to make the argument of why that makes sense. And that would be going into arts administration. And I think the business major, the way it's going to function is taking whatever your primary major is and teaching about the business within that major. So if you're working in, like if you're in the chemistry department, you'd have to argue why business, what's the business of chemistry? So I think in that way, it's more, then we question, are we going to need a lot more faculty for the department? I don't think it's going to be about losing faculty. I think we're going to have to gain a lot in order to teach those kind of specific.
Yeah, that's possible. It seems to me that this will probably cut some people away from the OMS major, including
yeah,
people.
Yeah, I agree.
It's also worth noting that currently there's a business minor.
Yeah.
And that I think it's something like 80%, or that number might be a little high, but two-thirds is a number that's thrown around, of OMS majors do the business minor as well. And so it's already something that there's clearly a great appetite for. It will be interesting to see, though, whether the business major attracts more people from across campus than the business minor had, which kind of seems counterintuitive. Like, it's easier to add a minor than a major, you would think. But on the other hand, in terms of the point you were making about attracting students, I think it is certainly the case that this is largely motivated by a desire to pull in more prospective students for whom, you know, you get on those college search tools and you search business major. And if Gettysburg doesn't come up in that, then Gettysburg is never in the conversation. But if Gettysburg does come up in that, even if it's an interdisciplinary program, you know, Gettysburg stays in the conversation for longer.
Yeah. I do think, though, that it's interesting. So how different is the business minor from the OMS major? Because, like, for example, you're a poli sci major, you can't have a poli sci minor. You know,
right.
It doesn't make sense. Is the business major different enough from, is the business minor different enough from the OMS major that it warrants that?
I don't know specifically the differences. I believe that the business major requires courses in accounting that are not part of the OMS major requirements. But certainly, it's all taught by the same group of faculty. So, you know, it to some extent seems to be similar to a department that might offer or have faculty affiliated with other minors on campus. You know, I'm thinking about peace and justice studies as an interdisciplinary minor. In this case, the major, OMS, is more interdisciplinary than the minor, which is kind of the opposite of what often happens, where these minors are more thematic or cross-disciplinary, you know, peace and justice studies or, you know, Middle East Islamic studies, those sorts of, you know, they're regional or whatever. But the business minor is certainly more focused on a particular topic. I think it also requires courses in economics.
Okay.
And so, you know, in that context, it's one of those kind of, I guess if it requires economics, then it is somewhat interdisciplinary. But in any case, it'll be interesting to see where this goes. This is something that the faculty have been discussing, has come up at a couple of faculty meetings this fall. I know that there are faculty from across campus who are participating, who have been at meetings relating to this proposed business major. I think that there is an appetite among the faculty to continue to keep Gettysburg College competitive, if for no other reason, and I don't mean to suggest that this is the only reason, but if for no other reason, then that student numbers continue to support the number of jobs there currently are in their respective departments, including perhaps their own. And that will likely, or perhaps, belie the assumption that would cut in the other direction, that the faculty would not have an appetite to add a pre-professional sounding major, which is something that I know President Gordon Holland was adamantly opposed to during his presidency from 1990 to 2004. Mm-hmm. And that's something we've discussed too. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. I think the plan, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think the plan is that this will be discussed throughout the remainder of the fall, mm-hmm. and then perhaps a motion will come to the faculty in sometime during the spring.
I believe that's correct, yeah.
All right. Well, in other news, recently Gettysburg College was sued in federal court. Lawsuit was filed in the Eastern District of Pennsylvania in late October, alleging that Gettysburg College, along with the Phi Sigma Kappa fraternity, the Phi Sigma Kappa alumni organization, and an individual by the name of Edward Carroll are liable for a variety of charges stemming from an alleged sexual assault that occurred in October of 2016. The college has been sued for a Title IX violation with respect to that issue, with respect to that incident. And so the college has said that the charges against it are baseless, and they intend to defend themselves vigorously in court. What's interesting in this particular case is that the alleged incident occurred at 343 Carlisle Street, which at the time of the incident was an off-campus house. It is owned by the Phi Sigma Kappa alumni organization, which for the last several years has leased it to some upper-class students living off-campus. And so it was not an on-campus property. However, in the past, Phi Sigma Kappa, the fraternity, lived in that house. That fraternity was derecognized by the college after a large drug bust in 2014. The national organization, which is also a named party to the lawsuit, revoked the charter at the same time the college derecognized the chapter, such that the fraternity nationally has no connection to the property and suggests that it should be severed from the lawsuit. The fraternity's alumni organization, which is a local organization specific to the Gettysburg alumni, which still owns the house, is alleged to be liable for knowingly owning a property where wild parties were occurring that had a proclivity for sexual assaults to occur. So they are a named party. And then also Edward Carroll, who graduated from the college in 2016 and is named along with two John Does. A rape kit was allegedly, I shouldn't say allegedly, the rape kit was administered and it allegedly turned up Carroll along with two others whose DNA could not be identified by the police. The police have not filed charges against Carroll. They did not respond to a request for comment regarding the status of that investigation, although I can say that a public records request is pending, and I would expect a response within the coming days on that. So all of this kind of creates an interesting situation for the college moving forward. I don't know, Gari, your thoughts?
I think something that's interesting about this is that this is a Greek organization that is no longer officially relevant on this campus.
Right.
And I fear that this will unfairly reflect on Greek life as a whole on the campus. Like, I'm not saying that there are not, we've talked extensively on the podcast this semester about there are definitely issues within the Greek system. However, I don't think it is a fair representation of Greek life at Gettysburg to look at what happened with Phi Sigma Kappa or allegedly happened at Phi Sigma Kappa as a reflection of Greek life today at Gettysburg, as it is not an official one, and it has been removed from campus for other reasons. However, I do hope that as members of Greek organizations are hearing about this, they're having conversations within their organizations and talking about what they can do to prevent issues like this, what they can do to prevent assaults, what they can do to support victims, how they can educate their brothers and sisters. I think that that's a very important step to take, and I think that's a step the community should take in the cases of tragedy every time, regardless of whether or not it's a reflection on you. And those are conversations that I think need to be had. On the other hand, I'm interested to see how the college handles discussing this with the current students. you know, I get that they have to be tight-lipped for safety and for
legal reasons,
obviously. But I want to see, you know, now that this is published and students will be talking about it, I want to see how the college is going to handle the discussions of this.
Yeah, and a couple things. I did not mention that the alleged victim of this incident was not a student.
Yes.
She was visiting her brother, who was a student, and by my research, appears to have been a member of the fraternity before it was disbanded, which is kind of an interesting wrinkle. But she was not a student. And she was not a minor either, so she was an adult. It appears to be that she was around 20 at the time of the incident, although that's unable to be verified. And so whether she has protections under Title IX is a question that some lawyers that I've spoken to did not seem to have a clear affirmative answer to. They were kind of, I don't want to say confused,
mm-hmm.
but not seeing a clear history of case law or anything that would suggest that a non-student can sue a college for violating Title IX. And so it'll be interesting to see where this goes. Responses by the various named parties, named defendants are due in January, and certainly we'll continue to follow this. What is interesting to your point is the college's response. Certainly, it has been the practice, or at least the public-facing practice of the college, to take allegations of misconduct seriously and to believe people who have survived incidents of this nature.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we saw a comment in this article from Jamie Yates, the college's spokesperson, that called these allegations without merit. Now, it is important to note that Jamie Yates's comment was referring to the allegations against the college, not the allegations of sexual assault. But that's kind of a nuance that I imagine some people may not catch.
And in some ways, I don't know if it's a fair thing to say. I think, you know, this is a residential college. I think I was talking to somebody recently who said something along the lines of, you know, DPS officers stand outside parties knowing things are happening inside, knowing things that are happening, like underage drinking and things like that. And in some ways, you were allowing that to happen by just standing outside and not going in. And I think when things like this happen, you know, it's at what point are you saying, well, we're respecting the fact that you are adults and we trust you to be doing what you're doing when you know these things happen? So in some ways, yeah, I mean, if the college isn't at fault, like, who is, in a way?
Yeah, I mean, the way I think you have to think about this, and when I say you, I mean people have to think about this.
Y'all.
Yeah, this would be where we need the German ear. I don't know how it is in other languages, but yeah, English does not have a good situation for y'all. The way that y'all need to think about this, I think, is that what would the college's responsibility be if it became aware of an alleged rape that occurred off campus, adjacent to campus perhaps, but decidedly off campus in a house that had no history of affiliation with campus, involving a non-student who had been assaulted, perhaps by a student, but a non-student nonetheless? And maybe the college does have a legal responsibility in that situation. Maybe the college has a moral responsibility in that situation. But I think that to conflate that with an assault happening in a current fraternity house misses a distinction that whether or not it matters in the doing the right thing sense will probably matter in the legal sense. Obviously, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm speculating. But to me, it seems that that's a distinction that perhaps could be missed.
On this whole, like, off-campus, on-campus thing, you know, I've heard since I've come to college, you know, so-and-so fraternity owns their house, so DPS can't go in, and they have to stand on the porch, and they're not allowed to go in no matter what's happening in there because it's not their building, and that's it. I think it's, honestly, I think it's BS at this point because, you know, at some point or another, you are in college, people are paying to go there. You have power, and this whole, like, we can't go in for legal reasons thing, if you know something's happening inside, just go in. Because at the end of the day, if something bad is happening there and you know something bad is happening in a frat, I don't care at this point who owns the building. Go in and fix what you need to fix. And I think it's the same thing in this situation. I get it. You can't do anything about it. If they didn't know about it, that's fine, whatever. But I'm so sick of hearing about, like, DPS had to stand outside. They knew something was happening in there. They couldn't walk in, blah, 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 blah. They just do the walkthroughs at the beginning of the end of parties. Like, all these things that are, on one hand, trying to protect safety and trying to do this and trying to do that. But on the other hand, they're just cutting corners. Like, how is you walking in before a party starts and after the party ends saving all the people that were there during the party? It doesn't do anything.
Yeah, and I mean, there are distinctions between what a campus police department could do versus what we have, and we can ask Faith Biesecker about this distinction, which is what a campus security authority that is a private, you know, it has no arresting power, for example, can do. But I think your point is certainly one that many people have considered and would agree with you on. It'll be interesting to see where this goes. Certainly, the fact pattern alleged, unfortunately, I don't think is terribly uncommon. What is uncommon is that it is being litigated in federal court.
Yeah.
And so the college will have to answer for some things. We'll see, you know, how that plays out. I don't think it's, you know, in the conversations that I've had with a couple of attorneys in writing the story that I wrote, they are not seeing clear liability for the college in a legal sense. So, you know, the only potential that would make the potential remaining liable parties, the person who is alleged to have perpetrated the rape, and perhaps the fraternity's alumni organization that owned the house that leased it to this organization. It's worth noting that currently this house is being leased to the college for use in the college housing program. That's the act. We need to call them theme houses again. They're college houses, which almost sounds like everywhere else on campus. So the college house program, the diaspora house, is located at 343 Carlisle Street, where this incident occurred. It's also worth noting that when Phi Sigma Kappa was booted off campus, it was for a 5-year period, and that was in 2014. And here we are in the twilight of 2018. Oof. And it is certainly the case, based on records on Phi Sigma Kappa's alumni organization Facebook page, that they would like to repopulate their fraternity on campus and that they view this decision to have leased that house to the college as a positive step in that direction. So whether this lawsuit will be a negative step in that direction, I suppose, remains to be seen. But it is certainly, you know, a consideration, another tangled web of this story, and one that we're going to continue to work to untangle in the coming days. What else is going on at Gettysburg?
Well, we're slowly wrapping up the semester, I think.
I hope.
It's finals week here, which has been interesting. The lull has... Correct me if I'm wrong, Ben, but I think...
I always try.
I think that this semester... I've seen a stronger, opinion from the college about this week is finals week, and it is for only finals week. I definitely think, for example, with 25 Live, which if you don't know is the service that we use to book rooms on campus for club events, and I think faculty can also use it to book for meetings and things. You know, you're not allowed to book anything this week, and I feel like that has been stressed far more this semester than in previous semesters.
I don't know. I mean, there has always been a rule that during finals week, there is a dead period of social events because, as we talked about last week and as continues to be the case, beginning on the Saturday before finals, students only study and don't even eat or sleep between then and when they leave campus, and we could not possibly have any events in the intervening days.
Yeah. Of course, that is definitely what happens. I don't know, but I think this semester I've definitely, it's been quiet. It's been really quiet, which is very strange. But I also feel like it's because it's Monday. We're recording this on a Monday. So it's the second day of finals, and I feel like by the end of the week, everyone's kind of going to go crazy.
Well, some of us are already there. Some of us were born there. I don't know.
So how is your finals week going, Ben, then?
It's going swimmingly. How about you?
It's going all right.
I had 4 exams, like, which is not something I typically have. Typically, you know, in those social sciences and humanities, yeah, we like to write papers instead of taking exams.
Yeah.
But, you know, 4 exams, not to say we also had papers and group projects and all that nonsense. So it's just been a hectic end of the semester, but... Good stuff.
I have 2 sit-down exams, and I have a project thing, like packet of work.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, I still got to do that.
All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap up our news segment. We'll be right back with the bullet report and then my interview with Faith Biesecker. Now it's time for the bullet report. It's been a fairly quick week in Gettysburg College sports action due to finals and all of that nonsense. The women's basketball team defeated McDaniel 62-58 on December the 5th. The men's basketball team lost to Johns Hopkins 81-56 the same day. The men's wrestling team lost to Messiah 33-6 on December the 7th. The men's basketball team lost 72-60 to Ursinus on December the 8th. It was only 4 games, and yet thus endeth the bullet report. We'll be right back with Faith Biesecker. And we're thrilled to be joined today by Faith Biesecker, the Assistant Director of the Department of Public Safety. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So why don't we start with just a little bit of personal background. How did you come to Gettysburg? How did you start in public safety? And then you've been gotten several promotions since then to your current job. Can you just talk a little bit about how all of that has transpired?
Yeah, so it's actually, I guess it's an interesting story. I graduated from Shippensburg in 2012 with a degree in criminal justice. And I was working initially for a juvenile detention center. And it wasn't what I would call the safest environment for a young woman. And I was kind of looking for some other opportunities to continue working in the field of criminal justice. And I saw a position at Gettysburg College for a community service officer 1. And I applied not knowing what necessarily to expect. As a recent college grad, I had gotten maybe a few parking tickets in my day. And so, you know, I've seen some of the, I guess, not necessarily negative, but the repercussions of when you park illegally. And so, you know, I didn't necessarily have, not that I had bad interactions with the police department at Shippensburg, but the only interactions I really had were about parking tickets. And so when I started working for Gettysburg, I was kind of didn't know what to expect. But within a few months of getting the position, I learned how different the Department of Public Safety is here, and that, you know, through our liaison program and different initiatives that we have that we're really working with students and trying to get to know them on, you know, a more personal level, and keep them from, you know, getting injured or we're trying to keep them safe, essentially. And so it's not a job where we're, like, seeking to get people in trouble or we're going out and we're looking for people who are doing who are drinking or things like that. We really are just trying to keep the campus community safe. And so learning that and getting to become involved in, you know, the liaison work, I initially started working with the sororities in a first year res hall. And so by working with those student groups, I really got to kind of know a lot of students around campus. And everyone kind of knows Officer Pearson. When they see him around campus, he knows everybody by name and can say hi. And
certainly a fan favorite.
Yes, definitely. I think his post that was just put on our social media sites is like the most highly interacted with post that we've had so far. And so, you know, that, not maybe to that level, but started happening for me too, and just kind of knowing students around campus and really getting to talk to them and see them all on a daily basis and learn more about them. I've always been like a people person and kind of enjoyed getting out and moving around. So this job offered the best of both worlds. And then I started becoming more involved in sexual violence, dating violence, domestic violence, and stalking, both in prevention and the response and investigation of it. And so that became an interest of mine because I want to help our students. And, you know, it just was kind of something that struck me that we could enhance or that I could be able to help students with. And so that's kind of what I did. I started focusing on that. And now here I am, the institution's Title IX investigator and prevention coordinator, in addition to many other roles. But that's really my focus.
And then this year that you have added the assistant director for community engagement?
Yes. So I've been with the Department of Public Safety for 6 years now. Mm-hmm. And in that transition, I kind of worked my way up. So I started as a level one officer. I went to a level two, went to corporal, which is a training officer. So I was kind of leading our field training initiatives. And then I went to sergeant and was doing, that's kind of when I really started getting involved in the Title IX investigations. And from there, I was moved to lieutenant. There was one of our lieutenants retired, George Neely, who's now our parking enforcement coordinator. And so I was given the opportunity to take on that role, and I did. And then within a year, it was clear that we needed to focus a little bit more time and energy on kind of the amount of investigations that were coming forward. And we realized as a department, like, how much time is being spent on those. And so there was an interim position created where it was assistant to the director for special projects with the Title IX investigator piece. And then just this past year, I was officially promoted to assistant director, and the title is of community engagement, comma, Title IX coordinator, investigator, and then prevention coordinator. So
need a two-line email signature to fit all of that in.
My business cards only have, like, part of it on. It's been a struggle. I feel like so many people in Gettysburg kind of wear many hats.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just what we do as an institution. So many of us want to be involved, and we want to do as much as we can to, like, help the institution and the students. And that's what happens. You just keep tacking it on.
I'm reminded of Jennifer McCary, who by the time she left, I think, had 6 or 7,
exactly,
you know, things. In any case, so talk about what the kind of the focus of the new role with community engagement specifically is, and then specifically perhaps mentioning the Public Safety Student Advisory Committee, which I'm assuming will have a fun acronym?
Yes, PSAC.
Okay.
Yep.
If it's at Gettysburg College, you know there's a fun acronym.
That's right. We do like acronyms, don't we? So community engagement, I've kind of been working in since I've started here. You know, as I said, I love working with students and getting to know them, working with clubs and organizations. And so I've always been involved in our liaison program, and that's one of my responsibilities, is kind of coordinating our liaison programming, which we've expanded a good bit to kind of include some upper-class housing, you know, theme houses, in addition to first-year res halls, the fraternities, the sororities. We hit a good many of clubs and organizations. Of course, we're limited in resources with the amount of officers that we have, but we at least try to make a connection with most student groups, whether it is a housing situation or it's a club or organization, by at least saying, you know, through email or dropping by the first meeting, hey, you know, this is who I am, this is what public safety does, and if you guys are interested in any kind of programming or activity, we'd love to work with you. And so by now having this role as the Assistant Director of Community Engagement, it's going to help me enhance that outreach a little bit more. I'm sure you guys have gotten surveys upon surveys asking for feedback on everything from food to, you know, housing situations to, of course, we did the climate survey a few years back, trying to get some information on sexual assault on campus and the institution's response and things like that. But we wanted a way to kind of get some more meaningful feedback and have direct conversations with students on a regular basis. We've always been kind of looking for ways to enhance things, and you know, if there's a new initiative and it would better serve our campus community, we're going to be happy to take care of that or to take start using that. And so this is going to be a way for us to get more of that hard kind of feedback in the discussion setting. So we'd like to kind of connect with a wide range of students across campus, different class years, students that are involved in different clubs and organizations, you know, someone from athletics, someone from Greek life, kind of just a wide variety of students across campus, students that aren't involved in anything because sometimes they're an untapped population of knowledge, right? And so this will be a way for us to kind of get that feedback and have an ongoing discussion about things we're thinking about doing, maybe something a student had a concern about. I'm not sure if you know, but each year we do kind of like a lighting check on campus. So Senate works with us and facilities to kind of walk around campus and see if there's anywhere that needs kind of some lighting improved, just to kind of make it a little bit safer at night when students are walking to and from. And so it's simple things like that that we want to kind of keep continuing and enhancing. So in addition to lighting, what else could we do? Would a blue light be more helpful somewhere else? And this will be a way to kind of talk about those topical things, but also some deeper things that come mm-hmm. forward.
And so you're hoping for 20 students on this committee, and some of them are at-large members, and then you also mentioned that there will be some representing certain groups. Overall, are there particular types of students? I mean, you said you wanted to attract a broad cross-section, but for students who might hear this and be interested, what sorts of qualities are you looking for and hoping that you'll have in the students on this particular committee?
That's a great question. Really, I'm just looking for students who want to be involved, who have something to say. You know, it's not necessarily going to help us out if students come and don't say anything, right? You know, we're trying to learn. We're creating this committee as a way to outreach to students and get that meaningful feedback. So I'm looking for students who have something to say, who want to engage, you know. We want to hear feedback. I've always been a firm believer that if you don't accept, you know, feedback, you're never going to learn. And I always look for opportunities to learn and better myself. And I think this will be a great way.
And how often do you anticipate this committee meeting? And are there any particular agenda items at the top of the list for those first few meetings?
So, as of now, I'd like the committee to at least meet twice a semester. So with this first meeting happening on Friday,
by the time this was has aired, this meeting will have happened last Friday,
So December 7th. But I'd like to at least meet twice a semester. And then as need, you know, as things kind of arise on campus, I think we could convene more often if necessary. And really the first things on the agenda item are just kind of checking in, establishing some ground rules through the committee. I've kind of been looking at what some other institutions are doing, but Gettysburg's unique, and I want this committee to fit our needs. So the first meeting will really kind of be focused on what the committee is about. There are some leadership positions available if students are interested. There's two co-chairs, a secretary, and then a communications manager. And so it's an opportunity for some students to get some experience. It'd be great for anyone interested in like public service, law enforcement, politics. Think of it almost as like a kind of borough council in a
specific topic.
Yeah, a lower level of just kind of discussion topics, but similar things to what they'd be talking about. And so really it's just kind of going to be a check-in and set some ground rules for the first meeting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And kind of maybe not switching gears, but thinking a little more broadly about the community engagement piece of your new role, what do you think students don't know about DPS that maybe they should know, you know, if their interactions are limited to, as yours were in college, parking enforcement or you know, wandering through an event before it begins on the weekends? What are some other things that DPS is doing that students aren't aware of or maybe that they should be aware of about parking enforcement or whatever else?
Honestly, I always just try to let students know that we're human. We do have interests and lives outside of public safety. And the way I enjoy talking to students most is on kind of that, like, just personal level about run-of-the-mill things. Like, how is your family? Or, like, how was your abroad trip? You know, we're a lot of dog lovers over in public safety. And so we always love talking about our dogs. A lot of our officers bring their dogs in. And that's what I want students to know most. Like, we want to have connections with students outside of the world of public safety. But on the other hand, we are open 24/7. You know, I always tell students that they can call us. And if we don't know the answer or we aren't able to help them, we'll find it. You know, we'll point them in the right direction. You know, we offer everything from medical escorts to the parking services to jump starts on campus and a whole plethora of other things. So we're a full service entity. We're one of the only departments in the area where you can physically walk in and speak with someone 24/7. Mm-hmm. And we think that's a great resource for our students. You know, even if it's a day where somebody's just kind of having, you know, they're down and they just want to be around somebody, the office is open. Mm-hmm. There's a table right there in the lobby, and we're more than happy to just chat for a few minutes or hang out.
Right. And so one thing that maybe some people are unaware of the distinction between Gettysburg's Department of Public Safety is not police.
Correct.
As in, you know, there are some campuses that have a campus police department, and that's not what DPS is. Could you talk a little bit about some of those differences and then also how you kind of work with the Gettysburg Borough Police?
Yeah, so we're not a sworn law enforcement agency. We're a private entity of the college. We do work very closely with the local law enforcement, and we have a few MOUs or memos of understanding with local law enforcement that allow us to handle incidents, you know, like minor liquor law violations, things like that on campus. And then if need be, we call the borough police. Typically that's if someone's, you know, harming themselves or someone else, or they're aggressive or they're in need of further medical attention, we'll call the ambulance. But yes, we are not a sworn law enforcement agency. We have no arrest powers. But we do work very closely with law enforcement, and when needed, we contact them.
Mm-hmm. And so DPS officers, of course, are not armed.
Armed with firearms, correct. So we have tasers, batons, and pepper spray.
And what sort of, you know, do they get used?
No.
Okay.
I mean, they could if the circumstance is called for it, but since I have been working here, we have not. It'd be a situation where somebody is harming someone else, that those instruments would be deployed. Everything is very circumstantial. You know, it's going to be based on what's occurring. And of course we have, you know, kind of a use of force guideline that's like, you know, these are the steps that need to be taken before anything like mm-hmm. that has been used. But really, I think in large part because of the relationships we have built with students, they kind of know, you know, like our process and how things work. And we're able to kind of connect with them while on incident. So even if someone's in trouble or someone's, you know, to the point where they're kind of getting angry and getting aggravated, we can typically kind of talk through things. And that's obviously always the best scenario if we can kind of work through things on that lower level scale and just kind of talk with everybody as people. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so you said that during your time, none of those more aggressive instruments have had to be deployed?
That's correct, to my knowledge. I mean, 6 years ago is getting pretty long ago now, but I don't recall anything, so yeah.
And then one of your other roles that you mentioned earlier is a Title IX investigator. Talk a little bit about what that entails and, you know, how a complaint, I guess, kind of goes through the process to, you know, I know that can go a lot of different directions.
Yes, yes.
But in general, if there is a general case, talk a little bit about how that happens.
So, it really is. It depends. Every situation is kind of circumstantial. And, you know, students are going to make different choices. But a lot of times what happens is a student will report to either the Title IX director, Amanda Blauer, or public safety. And initially we just kind of do what's called an intake process. We get some basic information, a lot of times information that's needed for Cleary assessment. So is it a Cleary crime? Does it need to go on the log? Do we need to send out a timely warning? Things like that. And then first and foremost, of course, we're assessing the student's need. Do they need support resources? Do they need to go to the emergency room? Would they like to go to the health center? Or do they need a connection to counseling? That's going to be first and foremost. Especially if it's an incident that occurred within, you know, the last few days. A lot of times those aren't the incidents we're seeing. We're seeing things that have happened weeks, months, a year ago. But the process is typically the same. So after that intake process occurs, then they'll meet with Amanda, Title IX Director Blauer, and she'll kind of ask them, what do you want to do? Would you like to go forward with the school's conduct process? And if so, that's what would kind of prompt the investigation then. They're also, of course, given the opportunity when they initially report to speak with law enforcement if they would choose to do so. And we can kind of help facilitate that connection if they'd like to. But so if they choose to go forward with this school's conduct process, that's kind of where I come in then. I'd reach out to the parties involved, any witnesses. I'd do everything I can to kind of gather information or evidence, whether it's social media or pictures, you know, text messages, anything like that, and just kind of gather as much information as I can about the case. And then from there, I create what's called an investigative report, and that would be then sent over to Amanda. And then it would go, she would determine if there's a threshold that's been met to go forward with a hearing board process, and it would go from there.
Mm-hmm. And so in the case that you mentioned, in the hypothetical that you mentioned, what would happen in the case where can you conduct an internal investigation at the same time as a law enforcement investigation's happening? Do they run in parallel, or do you wait until the law enforcement is over? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question, because obviously our processes are very different from the law enforcement process. Currently, we're operating under a 60-day time frame for our investigations. Of course.
What does that mean?
So that means we'd like to have everything completed, kind of wrapped up, the investigation done and sent over to Title IX and by within that 60-day mm-hmm. window.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if you've seen the new proposed regulations that have come out. And so that could change some things. But right now, this is our operating procedure, right? And so the police process can take years. The criminal process can take years sometimes. And we have this is one of the cases where we have an MOU, a memo of understanding again. And it kind of allows us to give them 10 days, 10 to 14 days to conduct their initial investigation. So if the student decides to go forward with law enforcement as well as our process, then that would give them the ability to speak with people and kind of get their investigation started before we would pick up. And our investigations, you said it perfectly, run parallel to each other. Just because law enforcement is doing an investigation does not make us exempt from having to do an investigation.
Is there anything else you wanted to mention about the committee?
As far as the committee goes, if you're interested, of course, even though this is going to air after the meeting, please let me know. We'll pick up again in the spring semester. We really just want to hear from students, and we'd be more than happy to have you come and join us. So,
all right. Well, Faith Biesecker, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That's On Target for this week. We'd like to thank Faith Biesecker for being our featured guest today.
We would also like to thank the staff of the Gettysburgian and the executive board of WZBT for their ongoing support in this project. Please be sure to subscribe to On Target on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburgian and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha, a music major focusing on composition in the Sunderman Conservatory of Music. This is the last episode of this semester. We'll see you in January. Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy New Year, and Happy Rest of Winter.